I hope you all got a little bit of a refreshment break. We do have a lot to cover, so we're going to go ahead and get started. And we're going to move. We're going to move from Asia to North America and to a problem that's primarily right now one of concern for wildlife and for domestic livestock, but certainly has human implications as we look down the line. Our first speaker is Dr. Trent Bollinger. He's the Western and Northern Regional Coordinator for the Canadian Cooperative Wildlife Health Center. He's also a pathologist in the Department of Veterinary Pathology at Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. He's coordinated chronic wasting disease surveillance, what we'll probably be referring to a lot as CWD, chronic wasting disease surveillance programs for the Canadian Cooperative Wildlife Health Center over the last 5 years, and is a recognized expert in pathology and epidemiology of disease in wildlife. Please welcome Dr. Trent Bollinger.
Thank you. First off, I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me to participate in this symposium. Chronic wasting disease is currently one of the most important issues in the management of wild deer and elk in North America. Federal, state, and provincial wildlife and agriculture agencies are spending millions of dollars annually to test for the presence of this disease and in some areas in an attempt to eradicate or at least limit its spread. I was asked to provide an overview on CWD and provide some background for the talks to follow. I will begin by discussing the spongiform encephalopathies and the general features of prion diseases. In the last part of my talk, we'll focus specifically on chronic wasting disease. CWD is a transmissible spongiform encephalopathy similar to scrapie in sheep and goats, Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease in humans, BSE in cattle and others. These diseases all result in fatal progressive neurodegenerative diseases characterized by vacuoles in the brain, hence their name spongiform encephalopathy. The photograph on the right is a histological section of a brain of a deer with late-stage CWD. You can note the vacuoles in neurons, and the red-stained areas are accumulations of prion protein. The spongiform encephalopathies are caused by a normal cell surface glycoprotein, which has been altered in its conformation or three-dimensional shape so that it is resistant to enzymatic or proteolytic degradation by the cell. The normal form of this glycoprotein, called prion protein C, or PRPC for short, is shown on the left. The abnormal form, designated as prion protein SC, or PRPSC, is shown on the right. The function of normal prion protein is not known, but is found primarily in the nervous system and in lymphoid tissue. Accumulations of abnormal prion protein within cells results in impaired function and eventually death of neurons. The resistant nature of this PRPSC also means that they are not readily destroyed by commonly used disinfectants and that they persist for long periods of time, for years or decades, on contaminated equipment and in the environment. The term prion refers to the protein infectious agent which contains this pathogen, PRPSC. So sometimes the terminology can be confusing. The concept of a protein without the presence of nucleic acids being an infectious agent and replicating within a host is a recent and radical shift in our perception of what constitutes an infectious agent. Stanley Prester won a Nobel Prize in Medicine for his research on these diseases and for proposing this mechanism of pathogenesis, although still what somewhat controversial research continues to support this theory. There are two ways in which spongiform encephalopathies can develop. In a very few individuals, the normal prion protein of a host appears to spontaneously convert to this resistant form. This type of disease occurs in humans and is the cause of sporadic Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, or sporadic CJD, which afflicts approximately one person per million per year. This form has not yet been detected in animals. Alternatively, PRPSC, the abnormal form of prion protein, can be transmitted to a new host. Irregardless of how the first PRPSC gets into the host, the outcome is the same. It acts as a catalyst to cause normal PRPC to take on this new resistant conformation. This cascading conversion of normal to abnormal prion protein occurs over time, resulting in a buildup of PRPSC, loss of cell function, and eventually cell death. An important concept to remember is that the amino acid composition of the PRPSC, the resistant form that is produced at the end of this reaction, is that of the host PRPC. All that has happened is it has taken on a new conformation. If the initiating PRPSC has a different amino acid composition than the host PRPSC, the PRPSC that is produced in the newly infected host is different than the inciting PRPSC. In some cases, the normal prion protein of the host is so different from the introduced PRPSC that the development of the disease is delayed or doesn't occur at all. This is a major determinant of the so-called species barrier. The other point to remember is that because this is a normal protein with a modified conformation, the host does not recognize it as foreign and does not mount an immune response. Therefore, animals will not develop resistance to the disease. You cannot use serology to detect exposed individuals, and you can't vaccinate for the disease using current vaccine strategies. I've tried to depict this phenomenon in this simple schematic. In the first scenario, the host normal prion protein is somehow incompatible with the PRPSC, and no conversion takes place. This species, or perhaps the individual, is refractory to infection. In the second scenario, the host normal PRP is more similar to the resistant PRPSC and can be induced to take on the abnormal conformation, but the conversion occurs at a slow rate. This animal would have a long incubation period and may in fact die of other causes, including old age, before developing clinical disease. Finally, in the last scenario, the PRPSC was derived from an animal with the same or very similar PRP genes, and the conversion of PRPC to the PRPSC is more rapid. There are numerous examples of this. If you take the brain from scrapie infected sheep and inoculate it into mice, the incubation period is approximately 13 months. You take infected brain from the first group of infected mice and inoculate it into a second group, the incubation period is cut in half, and in subsequent passage, the incubation period only drops slightly. The schematic on the right shows that initially there is some incompatibility between the sheep PRPSC and the mouse's PRPC, and hence the rate of conversion is slow. However, the mouse PRPSC that is collected from the first group of mice has a similar amino acid composition or sequence to the normal mouse PRPC in the second group, and the conversion occurs more rapidly. Changes in PRPSC when it is transmitted to new hosts can result in changes in the range of species susceptible to the prion. For example, tissue from CWD-infected mule deer were initially inoculated into hamsters in an attempt to establish a rodent model of the disease, but transmission did not occur. However, inoculation of ferrets did result in disease, and furthermore, if the brain from these ferrets was inoculated into hamsters, the hamsters now develop spongiform encephalopathy. The PRPSC produced in the ferrets was not the same as the initial PRPSC from the mule deer and could now establish infections in hamsters. The influence of homology of the PRP gene and the species barrier can be demonstrated in vitro. If you take recombinant PRPC from different species and expose it to CWD prion, you get conversion to the resistant form. This graph, or this figure here, shows that tissues from an elk infected with PRP SC, or the resistant form, was put in contact with recombinant prion protein C, or in this case they call it SEN, or for the sensitive form, with prion protein derived from mule deer, white-tailed deer, elk, sheep, bovine, and humans with different genetic makeups. And this shows the mean conversion of that normal cellular prion protein to the abnormal form. And in this particular case, the most rapid conversion will occur with between the CWD and the elk normal cellular protein, and this is seen as 100% conversion. And the percentages that are given here in this column are what percentage of this 100% conversion has occurred. So you can see that CWD prions induced normal cellular prion proteins from sheep to convert at a rate of 44% of what they saw in elk, bovine 19, and humans 7. As you would expect, this conversion occurs most efficiently with elk, mule deer, and white-tailed deer PRPC, and it occurs at a significantly reduced rate with sheep, cattle, and human PRPC, but it still occurs. Experimental and epidemiological research has shown that this transmission does not readily occur. Cattle challenged orally with CW prion have not developed disease, and there have been no cases of CWD in humans. However, there remains a theoretical possibility that this transmission to cattle or humans could occur. The risk is very low, if it exists at all, given the levels of exposure. If we look at BSE in cattle and BSE in humans, called new variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease as an example, it is estimated that between 1 to 2 million BSE-infected cattle got into the human food chain, and there have been approximately 140 cases of new variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease. Although the risks are low, the World Health Organization recommends that animals infected with TSEs not be consumed by humans. We did the same experiment for scrapie and BSE prions as well, and the results were similar to what was seen with CWD. These experiments tested molecular compatibility and clearly other factors such as dose, strain, route of infection, and efficiency of delivery to the nervous system, amongst other things, are important in determining transmission rates among species. The mechanism of transmission varies amongst the TSEs. Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease cannot be transmitted by natural human-to-human contact. However, it has been transmitted by the transplantation of dural grafts, blood, contaminated surgical instruments, and use of pituitary extracts from CJD infected cadavers. The Four tribe in Papua New Guinea demonstrated a TSE could be transmitted by oral exposure when they practice ritualistic cannibalism. This disease is called Kuru. BSE in cattle can be transmitted to other cattle through feed containing BSE prions. The feeding of protein supplements containing prions derived from rendered products of BSE-infected cattle was the cause of the large BSE or mad cow disease epidemic in cattle in Great Britain. BSE-contaminated food also caused spongiform encephalopathies of a range of other species, including zoo animals, cats, and humans. BSE cannot be transmitted by normal animal-to-animal contact. In contrast, in scrapie and sheep, and CWD in deer and elk can be transmitted by natural animal-to-animal contact as well as by exposure to pastures, which have been grazed by infected animals, even if the pasture contamination occurred several years prior. With that review, let's look more specifically at chronic wasting disease. This is a disease of mule deer, white-tailed deer, and elk in the wild and in captivity, but can occur in subspecies of mule deer, such as black-tailed deer and Sitka deer. It has been experimentally transmitted to moose by oral exposure, but the disease has not been reported in wild moose. The predominant feature of CWD in deer and elk is loss of body condition, as demonstrated in this photograph. Most naturally infected animals develop clinical signs at 3 to 7 years of age, and the youngest being approximately 17 months. Subclinically infected animals can be detected at much younger ages by demonstrating the prion in lymph nodes of the head and obex. CWD was first recognized as a clinical syndrome in mule deer and black-tailed deer in research facilities in Colorado and Wyoming in 1967. And in 1978, Dr. Beth Williams determined that this was a wasting syndrome. This wasting syndrome was, in fact, a form of spongiform encephalopathy similar to scrapie in sheep. Where or how CWD originated is not known. One explanation is that CWD is actually sheep scrapie occurring in cervids. It could have also originated from prion diseases in another species which has not yet been discovered. Alternatively, the disease may have developed independently in cervids with spontaneous conversion PRPC to the resistant form and then subsequent spread to other animals. In 1981, CWD was recognized in a free-ranging elk in Colorado. Subsequent surveillance of free-ranging cervids indicated that the disease was present in northern Colorado and southeast Wyoming. The overall prevalence of disease is given in this slide. However, in some deer management zones, the prevalence was approximately 50%, and in some more localized areas, the prevalence is higher in the order of 25 to 30%. Through the 1980s and 1990s, the disease was thought to be confined to this area, and this was considered to be sort of the endemic zone for CWD in wild species. In 1996, CWD was diagnosed in a farm elk in Saskatchewan, and a second case was diagnosed in 1998. Both of these index cases could be linked to a farm in west central Saskatchewan and ultimately to elk imported from South Dakota in the late 1980s. CWD likely had been on the farms in South Dakota and the west central part of Saskatchewan since the 1980s and had gone undiagnosed. CWD was eventually detected in 40 Saskatchewan game farms as part of a CWD management and surveillance program. Farm cervids in Saskatchewan have been free of the disease for the last 2 years. However, the eradication program has cost well in excess of $30 million. In 1994 and 1997, a total of 125 elk were shipped from Saskatchewan to South Korea from a farm that was subsequently found to have CWD, and one of these elk was confirmed positive for CWD in 2001. This is the only case of CWD outside North America. A surveillance program to look for CWD in wild cervids in Saskatchewan began in 1997, and the first case of CWD in a mule deer was diagnosed in 2000. We now have diagnosed CWD in 32 mule deer and 2 white-tailed deer from 3 geographically distinct areas as shown on this map. This scenario has played out in areas of the United States as well. Wisconsin detected their first case of CWD in wild white-tailed deer in 2001 in a relatively localized area in the south-central region of the state. This was followed by detection of the disease in wild whitetails in northern Illinois. About the same time, CWD was detected in a single wild mule deer in southern New Mexico, in wild cervids in Nebraska and South Dakota, and more recently, cases have been detected in Utah, and there has been spread to a new foci in Colorado and Wyoming. This map shows where CWD has been detected and farmed in wild cervids. In some jurisdictions, the disease has since been eradicated from farm species, but nowhere has it been eradicated in the wild. The known distribution of this disease has changed dramatically over the last 5 years, in part due to increased surveillance and detection of the disease, in part due to natural spread, and in part due to humans moving CWD-infected deer and elk to new areas, and in some cases with subsequent spread to wild cervids. Responding to the emergence of CWD in North America poses very significant challenges. Management of the disease is undertaken in the face of uncertainty about its epidemiology, such as how it is transmitted and at what rate. There is uncertainty regarding its long-term effects on wild deer and elk populations, their ecosystems, and the risk to other species, including humans. Establishment of the disease in the wild poses a continued risk to captive cervids and perhaps other species. It is a disease with significant implications to wildlife, domesticated animals, and human economies, and for this reason requires an integrated response among agencies responsible for wildlife, domestic animal, and human health. Thank you.